Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. More than 1,500 inmates nationwide could be affected by yesterday's U.S. Supreme Court ruling banning mandatory life sentences without parole for juvenile offenders. And Pennsylvania has more convicts in that category than any other state. Let's anticipate how that ruling may play out in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia with Jules Epstein, professor at Temple Law. Professor Epstein, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Glad to be here.
And I understand your work in part concentrates on capital cases. This ruling yesterday adds on to a previous ruling in 2012. Explain.
Okay, so 2012, the court said going forward, you couldn't sentence juveniles convicted of murder to a life without parole sentence without an individualized hearing. In other words, you couldn't have an automatic life sentence. Yesterday's ruling is what we call retroactivity, whether this same rule would apply to people who committed crimes as juveniles 5, 10, up to 40 years ago and were sentenced to life without the possibility of parole.
Though, if I understand correctly, the finding yesterday does allow states, if the procedure plays out that way, to retain that life without parole status.
Yes. After a hearing, but with one added thing. The United States Supreme Court majority wrote that yesterday it will be the rare juvenile offender who can receive that sentence. And I take that, and I think many people take that as saying that the presumption is unless this person has continued to be really, really incorrigible in prison and committing other crimes, the presumption should be some change in status.
Now, how many cases does this affect in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, and why is the Keystone State so overly represented in this regard?
Okay, a couple of reasons. As of 2009, which was the last year I could get hard data for, we had 480 people who committed crimes as juveniles before they turned 18, serving life without parole sentences.
Now, in every case, these are convictions on murder.
Yes, but here's the problem. We have degrees of murder in Pennsylvania. And in Pennsylvania, not only does first-degree murder and intentional killing carry life without parole, but a crime called felony murder does. So if four of us decide to rob a bank, and I'm outside as the lookout, and you're the getaway driver, and two people go in, and someone in the bank dies accidentally as a result of that crime. All four of us are guilty of felony murder. All four of us face life without parole.
So in lay terms, an accomplice to the crime is also held in the same regard.
On felony murder, that's correct.
And Pennsylvania, I presume, is among a minority of states who also cite that category as a potential for life without parole for a juvenile.
That's my understanding, yes.
How will this process likely play out?
Okay, so the U.S. Supreme Court gave two options. One is states could ask their parole boards to get involved and start paroling these folks. The problem is Pennsylvania's parole statute currently says the parole board may consider all cases except for an inmate serving life. So we couldn't send these all to the parole board, as I understand it, without new legislation. The alternative is that each of those 400 or 500 people will seek a hearing before a judge, will have the right to an attorney, and to do it right, should have the right to sufficient social work or psychological services to really give the judge the information that's needed.
What kind of burden, though, does that place on the existing infrastructure?
A significant burden. I don't want to be smart-mouthed when I say this, but it's going to cost a lot less than keeping these folks in jail till they die. It's $25,000 to $30,000 a year per inmate per year. And once inmates get over the age of 50, and I'm over 50, so I get this, there's more health care, there are more problems, and the costs go up. The problem is That's the prison budget. This will come out of other budgets. Overall, the cost should be much less. In other words, let's imagine, and I'm making up a number, it would cost $10,000 to do one of these hearings. That's $10,000 extra in the court's budget. On the other hand, in terms of the overall state, we might be saving $1 million.
Over the long haul.
That's right.
In the short term, though, would it be like rush hour traffic on the Schuylkill? Is there enough of a court infrastructure in place to handle the number of cases that could be presented before it?
Great question. Don't know. And what I'm really hoping, and I've spoken to one or two people about this already, is that the Philly DA's office and the public defender's office and maybe the juvenile law center and the court system will sit down and have a talk early on and say, how do we manage this? Because it would be a lot smarter if these cases, if everyone sat at the table and said, let's figure out an approach, than doing this one case at a time.
But each case is unique, and specifically I'm thinking now of the family members and friends of murder victims. This will reopen memories if they have to retestify in that regard.
Right. And certainly the quote, they have to retestify, they certainly, I'm assuming, would have the right to, but the inquiry is different. Their voices have been heard. The person was sentenced and convicted, and these convictions, they're all final. Nothing says, hi, you're no longer a murderer. All that's being done is asked what should have been asked. In other words, the court's saying, we should have had this rule in place 30 years ago or 10 years ago, that when the person who did this is under 18, there isn't a presumption of life without parole. The presumption is, at some point, this person will change. And I don't want to be rude again to the families, the survivors, but that's a question they often don't have answers to. That's about the defendant's background and social history and psychological makeup. And for all these folks who've been in jail for years and years, we have a tremendous pool of information. They're prison histories. So we're going to know, to quote Santa Claus, who's been good and who's been bad.
Does yesterday's decision move us closer to a standard already enacted in many Western countries?
Yes. Juvenile life sentences, put simply, are not the norm internationally.
Professor Epstein, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you.
Temple Law Professor Jules Epstein.